The recording has started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the GNSO EPDP Small Team Number 1 meeting taking place on the 11th of October, 2018 at 1700 UTC. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. At this time, we have Margie Milam, who is on the audio portion only. We do have apologies from Rafiq Damak, GNSO Council Liaison, Matt Serlin, RRSG, and Yulf Helsingis, NCSG. They have formally assigned Lindsay Hamilton-Reed, RRSG, and Colin Curry, NCSG, as their alternates for this call and for the remaining days of absence. During this period, the members will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the members' return date. All documentation and information can be found on the EPDP wiki space. There is an audio cast and view only Adobe Connect for non-members to follow the call, so please remember to state your names before speaking. Recordings will be circulated on the email list and posted on the public wiki space shortly after the end of the call. Thank you, and over to you, Gina.
Great. Hello, everyone. This is Gina Bartlett from the Consensus Building Institute, and I'll be serving as your facilitator for the conversation. And our primary goal here is to build off all of the great insights from your first meeting on answering the H charter questions on the applicability of data processing requirements, primarily on natural versus legal person. And what we want to do on this call is confirm that we've accurately captured the answers to the charter gating questions to go into the initial report, and then a number of you offered policy recommendations building on your understanding of the issues and concerns outlined during your first call, and staff have also made an attempt to marry the different suggestions into some proposed language. And does everyone, this document that's before us was emailed out, and it was sent, let's see, there's a question in the thread around when it was sent. But Marika, do you know offhand when you sent the email? 2 hours
ago. Gina, this is Marika. The issue is that it went to those that were on the first call and not those that have now joined, but I've just sent it to Ashley and Alan. I think everyone else that I see here on the call, I see that Lindsay has dropped off, but I'll send it to her as well so everyone has it. So apologies for that. It just went through the small group that was on the first call initially.
Great. And Ben Butler, did you get it?
I sure did, yes.
Okay, great. Just wanted to confirm. So any other problems with having the document before we jump in? Anyone want to speak up or just in the chat? It sounds like we've tried to get it to everyone, and then we have it in front of us. So part one, we have a part one, which is the charter questions, and part two on the policy. I'd like to break those two things apart, but before we jump in, I wanted to give Marika an opportunity to speak to her attempt to marry the different suggestions and make some recommended language, and she did introduce the idea of an implementation team. And so maybe before we jump in on the charter questions, let's hear from her and to offer some explanation and kind of walk us through that.
Yeah, thanks, Gina. So this is Marika. So first of all, thanks to everyone who contributed to the Google Doc and provided their edits and comments. Basically, after everyone was done, we took that document down and looked through all the comments and edits that were made. As there was a lot of red line in there, you know, the first step, we basically just accepted all the changes. But of course, you know, that doesn't mean that you've agreed on those or signed off on those, but at least that made the document a little bit more manageable to review and edit. So what we then did was look at the comments and suggestions that were made. And in certain cases, you know, people suggested certain clarifications, and in certain cases, it was clear that there was, you know, not necessarily agreement in relation to what was being proposed. So what we did, and that is what you see up on the screen, is kind of our attempt. We went through the document, and first of all, in the response to the charter questions, you know, what you see highlighted in yellow are a couple of additions to the original responses, which I think Mark took a stab at providing, and adding some clarification based on some of the comments that were submitted. And then if you actually look at, you know, what are intended to be the preliminary recommendations that would go into the initial report, you know, once, of course, you've signed off on it, and once the EPDP team as a whole has looked at it and is fine with that, is basically in certain cases a number of alternate versions. Again, you know, what we try to do, and it's in this case, you know, the first one you see here in the A1, there was an original version that I think Maureen wrote up, and some may have. I've already, you know, added some of that language. Alex also provided an alternative version in one of his comments. And then, you know, staff basically looking at, you know, the input provided, also factoring in what you discussed on the call, kind of try to, you know, bring that all together in a, you know, potential alternative version that, you know, may serve as a compromise or maybe at least as a starting point for a compromise. And you see that on a number of occasions where you see indeed a version, you know, B1 and version B2, basically the staff version is this attempt of, you're trying to capture the comments and suggestions that were made in a version that, you know, maybe, you know, hopefully broadly acceptable, but if not, you know, maybe it can serve as a starting point for coming up with something that everyone feels comfortable in moving forward with. Gina did mention, and I think that's what you see in A3, you know, what we discussed on the previous call was this notion of, you know, future work or additional work needing to be carried out. And I think, you know, were some questions and comments around as well, like, you know, how would that be done? How does that fit in? So one thing that staff has put forward here, and I think some of you are familiar with that concept, is this notion of an implementation review team. You know, having heard about what needs to happen in order to be able to determine if and how you can distinguish between a legal and a natural person, it seems that your specific operational knowledge and expertise is required, and you know, that is typically what happens in an implementation review team. But of course, having said that, you know, if you believe that that is work that needs to be carried out within the confines of the EPDP or another kind of group, that is, of course, you know, open for you to discuss and decide on. But as I said, you know, having heard the kind of things that...
Marika, we just lost your audio.
This is Gina.
Oh. Yeah, oh, can you still hear me, Gina?
Now you're back.
Oh, now we can. You cut out. Sorry.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that, and I'm even on the phone. So I don't know where you lost me. So I actually
you
wanted
were,
to ask you, Gina, do you want me to go...
You were talking about an IRT.
Oh, right. Yeah. So, again, yeah, that's just a suggestion we wanted to put on the table. Of course, there are other ways in which this work could be done. But again, it's for the group to consider what might be most appropriate. Again, what you want to put forward to the full EPDP team. So the question is, do you want me to go through bullet point by bullet point? Do you first want to open it up for questions or comments? Or how would you like to proceed, Gina?
I think we could open it up for comments. I mean, the proposals are, you know, quite clear. Maybe I would first, before we open it for comments, just ask if anyone has any particular questions for Marika. I feel like that overview was quite good, Marika, so maybe we'll just see if anybody has questions for you. It looks like Alan Greenberg has his hand up.
Thank you. Not a question, but two comments. Number one, on an IRT, I certainly support an IRT, but I would not want to see an IRT adding new data elements. I think those are going to be too controversial, and if we say an IRT will add data elements, we're going to get so much flack from so many people that I don't think that's acceptable. So I think we have to do that work ourselves before the EPDP ends. On an other related issue, and I first of all, I apologize for not being on the first meeting and jumping in now, but I think I have a moderately good idea of the issues involved. On the staff proposal, I note that it omits what is in some of the other options of a timeline and a deadline. We have experience in other areas, and particularly the 2013 RAA put some verification requirements on who is current, who is data, but omits it only must be done at the time a domain is registered or transferred. And that makes it open-ended. There are domains that have existed for decades that are not being transferred or things, and therefore they're grandfathered. And I believe whatever we do, we need an absolute real timeline, a realistic one, and one that acknowledges the difficulties registrars will have in implementing this. But I think we need a real timeline with a real endpoint. Thank you.
And you mean a calendar endpoint. Is that what you mean, Alan, just to clarify?
Yes, whether it's 5 years from the implementation or, worst case, when the domain is next renewed, which is a maximum of 10 years, which I think would be far too long. But nevertheless, it has to be a schedule which is not open-ended, so there will not be grandfathered domains that are not identified as legal or natural persons potentially forever.
Okay. It looks like in the chat. Go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, if I can, this is Marika, if I can maybe just respond to Alan's questions and comments. So I think in version B2, it refers to the need for developing a timeline, and you're referring to this phased approach. What indeed is not covered here, that should also consider registrations that may not expire. And I do believe, I think Alex may have made a comment in that regard. So maybe that's something we can call out there. But at least my understanding was from the initial call that it would only be possible to kind of plan such a timeline once it would be known how the mechanism would work and how complicated it might be.
Of course.
Based on that, it might be easier to do certain things quicker or shorter. And similar, and you're happy to hear from the rest of the group on that in relation to the additional data elements. What I understood from the conversation is that it might not be clear what data elements would need to be added until there would be clarity around how it could and would be done in practice. And out of that kind of implementation-related work, it may become clear that in order to do it, you need to add additional data fields. So that was a bit, at least from the staff's understanding, the reason why it was fitted with an implementation review team to do that. But if that's something we misunderstood and it's actually a policy decision on additional data fields, and then of course that needs to be adjusted.
Yeah, it's Alan. Just to be clear, I have no problem with an IRT deciding we need several extra data fields to implement this. I think that will not go over well with other parts of the BDP.
Okay, so you're just flagging that. James, I beg your patience. I just want to follow up one more piece with Alan. So, Alan, did Marika's explanation address your concern around the open-endedness that the implementation review team, as part of its initial work, would outline the timeline?
Yeah, that's far. As long as there is a timeline and it is not so long that it's past some of our lifetimes.
Right. So just for clarity, I'm going to go to James. We're going to stay focused on the recommendations first, since we're going to lose James in 30 minutes. And that way, because I think last time we also lost him in the recommendations conversation. So we'll start with these, and we're open for comments. Go ahead, James.
This is Margie. May I be in the queue as well? Sorry, I can't raise my hand.
Absolutely, Margie. I'll put you in right after James. Is that all right?
Yes, thank you.
Have we lost everyone?
Hello?
Go ahead. There you are, James.
Okay.
James, go ahead.
Just got a few minutes left now before I have to drop. On our first call, I felt like I was pretty encouraged that we were gravitating around some consensus language that would be useful and desirable and and perhaps necessary to be compliant with the data protection laws that that we would make this distinction between legal and natural persons. I was very discouraged, however, when I saw the first edits, and the first two right out of the gate said contracted parties should be required to dot, dot, dot. That is, to me, that is a huge departure from what we discussed. And from my perspective, that I can tell you that's not going to fly with my constituency or my stakeholder group, and it's probably going to get me personally kicked off the EPDP. So I don't know how to express this here, is that we need to put a marker down that we are going to make some recommendations that support some high-level principles, some high-level guidelines, but recognizing that this EPDP, which is now, you know, right around 6-7 months of calendar time and probably less in functional time when you count all the steps that have to happen away from expiring, you know, that we have to be very judicious about what we're willing to take on in this group and what we need to, you know, by necessity, kick to a follow-on work effort. And so I just want to caution everyone. We can say that we support this idea that registrant organization is overloaded and is not appropriate. We need to look at additional data fields but that has to be a torch or a baton that is passed to some post-May 29th group. And then, you know, to Alan's point, I think, you know, if we want to say that, you know, this is a go-forward proposition, but you know, we pick up existing legacy registrations at renewal transfer, then the maximum for that would be, I believe, whenever the date of that went into effect plus 10 years. So that is an end point. Going back and picking up changes like that, when you're in the middle of a registration term for at scale for 137 million registrations is very, very challenging and will be met with limited success. So we can try that. We can put a stake in the ground going forward. We can pick up, you know, it's one of those long tail problems where you pick up maybe 70% the first year and 70% of what's left the second year and so on. But you're always going to have this marginal population of domain names that's going to take it out all the way to the theoretical maximum of 10 years, and I think we should be we should just be okay with that. So that's my piece. I've got to drop here shortly. I'll drop out of the queue, but on those two points, I think we need to back up from saying any language about, you know, contracted parties are required to, and then back up to just some high level principle recommendations that we can all support. And then clearly define what sort of work we want to hand off to a follow-on effort. Thanks.
So, James, I just have two follow-ups before I go to you, Margie, and then back into the thread. So the staff recommendation, I just wanted you to call your attention to that language, and maybe we can, which is the distinction between legal and natural persons is useful and necessary for GDPR and other data protection laws. I mean, are you comfortable with that language? Because that's the staff's attempt to try to marry the concepts discussed as well as what was suggested in the different proposals.
Yeah. Of the three versions, I believe the staff version, which was the first version, is, in my opinion, tracks most closely to what we discussed on call.
Okay, great. And do you have any sense of, do you support the idea of an implementation review team?
Yes, but noting that some implementation review teams recently have struggled, I think we need to be very clear about what we wanted to do and what we want to steer clear of. And I think that has been the undoing of many recent implementation review teams. But I do believe that's the mechanism.
Okay, thanks, James. Okay, Margie, to you, and then I'll come to, it looks like Alan's hand is up. Go ahead, Margie. She wasn't able to raise her hand, so I'm going to go to Margie first.
Sure, thank you. This is Margie. A couple observations. I was commenting, I raised my hand to comment on Alan's suggestion. The reason why I had suggested on the last call that we inventory CCTLD practices was because I wanted to ensure that the policy addressed the issues that need to be addressed in the policy, because an implementation team can only implement what the policy says. And so some of if you follow the logic of what Marika's suggested, you wouldn't necessarily have a policy until after the implementation team does their work. And in our view, that's just too long a time. And I know this is contrary to James's approach and the registrar's approach that this not be addressed now, but frankly, it needs to be addressed now. If you look at the timing of what needs to happen in the EPDP, we could certainly put it at a different phase of the EPDP, so work on the things that we need to work on first, get those agreed on, and then move to the legal natural person distinction. But this distinction, in our view, needs to be should be required when language. In other words, that yes, we understand there's an implementation phase to this. It's going to take some time. But it needs to be a commitment, because I don't understand when the registrars say that it's necessary to make the distinction. I guess I don't understand why it's necessary to make the distinction if there's no requirement. And this impacts a huge amount of records that relate to legal person or natural person. So from my perspective, we need to include that in the policy. It needs to be part of the CPDP. It can be done at a later point, and then the ask about looking at CCTLD experiences is to help guide what the policy recommendation should be, and that's why I made the recommendation that we look at that now, not later. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Margie. Alan Greenberg, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I guess I support what Margie's saying. I don't think we can leave the concept that we will have a way to distinguish, and therefore a way to distinguish when we display information, whose we can display and whose we may not be able to. That has to be part of the policy. The implementation of how quickly it gets done, obviously we are not going to get done for May, but I don't think we're going to. Regrettable that James has dropped off, because I don't believe I understand the reluctance to use the words contracted party should. We're not saying they should as of May 29th, 2019, but I believe ultimately there needs to be a commitment that this will be done and a requirement that it be done. It can't be something the contract parties can decide to do if they feel like it. So although I understand we don't want to see it looming with a huge implementation issue in the next 9 months, I don't know why the policy should not say that contracted parties must do this, factoring in reasonable timelines and reasonable implementation timelines. And although we're not here to be the implementation review team, I think the policy document has to provide some level of guidance of a way to move forward so this gets done sooner rather than later. Now, 10 years may be acceptable for the last one, but we need to make sure that we cover others quicker. And as an example, and we're getting into implementation, if there's an organization field specified, then maybe the timeline for resolving those is less than 10 years. So there's lots of innovation we can do, but I think it's essential that we move and move relatively quickly on it. Thank you.
Thanks. So it would be helpful to hear from the contracted parties around if adding a time frame for when it would be required might help, crack this egg of the distinction and allowing for it, but at some point in the future requiring it. Alex Deacon, go ahead, please.
Gina, sorry for interrupting. You may not see my hand, but I'm slightly.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I do believe I had my hand up before Alex. If I just may, Alex, I hope you don't mind, because I was actually going to respond to something that that Margie said and commented on, because I know that this document just came not too long before this call, and not everyone may have had a chance to look at it in detail. But staff did try to capture this notion of requiring, while at the same time accepting that it may be difficult for contracted parties to commit to requiring without knowing how that would actually work in practice and whether it would even be doable. So the way that's phrased currently in version A3 is that basically it would be the implementation review team's task to kind of work through how to do this in practice. And once the implementation review team has agreed that, yes, we found a way of doing it that's deemed acceptable by all involved, at that point, it would become a requirement. So there's a, there's a bit of a kind of a two-step process. And again, I don't know if that is acceptable to those on the call as a way of addressing the fact that it's hard to commit to requiring something if you don't know how that will look or whether that's even possible. And then of course it also then ties to the time frame. And to Margie's point on starting this work now, and again, I don't know if you had a chance to look at the updated document, but we tried to capture that in the version D2, that point that, and again, for those that may not be familiar with implementation review teams, those are usually supported by our colleagues from the GDD team who, have much more operational knowledge than we do. So the idea would be that they could already be asked to start looking at, how CCTLDs are doing that, so that once the IRT convenes, there would already be something that they could start looking at and maybe build on. Although indeed, and my last point was, although of course IRTs traditionally commence their work, once a PDP has completely completed its work and the board has approved it, again, I don't think that's a requirement as such, and there may be a way of kind of starting this work in parallel if there is indeed agreement that is a path forward and there's a commitment of the group that it is an area that's important to look at and that should already start now instead of waiting till all the work of the EPDP team is done. Maybe that's a way of kind of already moving some of that over where additional research is needed. And again, there may also be a need to kind of bring certain things and potentially back either to the EPDP if it still exists or GNSS or council at that point, if there isn't a sense that whatever comes out of that requires further policy consideration or some kind of approval process before it can move into implementation. So I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out, Marika. It's very helpful. Okay, Alex Deacon, thanks for waiting.
Thanks. It's Alex for the record. Again, I appreciate James's comment and the concerns his organization has regarding the volume of registrations that his org specifically will need to deal with. This concept of an optional requirement is really an oxymoron. I mean, for those of us who've ever done any technical standards, we understand how this game's work, right? If you want something to be effective, it has to be required, because if it's not, then most of the times, most of the implementations, won't actually implement those that are not required. So I agree with Margie and Alan that in a perfect world, it should be a must, right? With the pragmatic phasing that we discussed, and I understand that for 10-year registrations, there may be cases where, this won't be addressed for 10 years. And I think, we understand that that's will be the reality. I think it's important that to also keep in mind that this issue, the issue related to legal and natural, is related to or is linked to the issue with regard to the application of whether this should apply to EU versus non-EU residents, because in the end, it's, you know, what we're concerned about is around access. And from the call this morning, I'm really concerned that getting disclosure to this data is going to become even more difficult and more challenging. And so when I see that happening at the same time that we see, you know, what I would describe as the over-application of GDPR for legal versus natural and EU versus non-EU, but for me, that makes life very difficult for many of us. And so, all of these things are related. You know, they concern me, and they because really, at the end of the day, they're going to make this disclosure issue much more difficult. So we have to keep all that in mind, I think, as we work through this. You know, I'm all about coming up with practical solutions, and you know, we have to come to a consensus with regard to, you know, how we move forward and ensure we do move forward. But I think we have to keep the big picture in mind here. So I just wanted to mention that. Thanks.
Thanks, Alex. So, Mark Anderson, I'm going to go to you, and not to put you on the spot, but it would be great to hear from you. Marika explained the staff's proposed language of making the distinction, moving through the implementation to figure out this kind of system that would need to be put in place, and then, you know, having it be framed, that once that's framed and everyone can understand, it would be required. So during your remarks, it would be helpful if you could speak to whether or not is that is a way to marry the interest of having requirements with, you know, the constraints of the contracted parties. Thanks.
Thanks, Gina. It's Mark. You can hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. And yes, I can certainly touch on that. I tried making a few notes. So I want to touch on a couple of different things, but I think I do want to take a second and touch on, you know, on James's initial remarks and maybe, you know, try and share some insight to everybody on this call from my perspective, because I can, you know, I get where James is coming from, and I can, and his reaction didn't surprise me. And so I want to try and explain to everybody my view on that one, in the hopes that it'll help us sort of understand each other better moving forward. I thought the first call we had was really good, and I think this call is going really well so far. I think people are you know, being, you know, making really good comments and trying to work together to come up with, you know, really good solutions on how to go forward. And they are like, tone helps a lot. But when I first opened up, the document, you know, the Google Doc that we were asked to comment on, you know, tone in a document is difficult to get, but the tone in that document came through very differently than the tone of our discussion on this call and the previous call. I think that's what James is responding to a little bit. I don't know if that makes sense to everybody. I'll try to, like, it comes, you know, it came across, as maybe, you know, the people suggesting edits took that as an opportunity to start, you know, firing off a list of things that they would like to make contracted parties do. And which was, you know, which came across very differently than the collaborative tone we had on the calls. And so, I want to share that just to sort of give you my perspective that, you know, I was, you know, as soon as I read that, I kind of anticipated James's response, you know, because of that, and just try and highlight that for everybody. So, you know, maybe you can, you know, appreciate that and, you know, the sensitivities that I guess that we're dealing with here. I hope that's helpful. I'm sorry if I went long there, but let me get to some substantive comments here. First, I have to apologize. I lost my computer shut down on me here, so I am no longer in Adobe. So I'm not sure what to make of that. But but getting back to my substantive points, you know, to what Marika suggested, you know, I want to say this is interesting. Basically her suggestion seems to be putting a lot more responsibility on an implementation team than I think an implementation team would typically have. And so this would be a different twist. I'm intrigued by the possibility, right? And, you know, listening to what everybody, you know, has said that, you know, all right, we've got a lot of other work to do, but this is still important and we need to address this. Well, you know, then maybe sort of saying, okay, an implementation, you know, hey, implementation team, we agree in principle that this needs to be solved, but we recognize that we don't have the time to solve it ourselves. Can you go off and come up with recommendations on how to solve this? You know, I think this is, you know, maybe, you know, this could maybe be a solution in recognizing sort of the limitations and the time constraints of what we have to work with here on the EPDP and coming up with a path forward. So I'm definitely intrigued by the possibility. I think I think it has potential. I think James here made another good point, though, that one of the you know, implementation teams haven't always gone smoothly, and that's often because they don't have clear direction in some areas or sort of clear guardrails on their scope, and so this is potentially magnifying that challenge and giving them less guide rails and less scope than they would normally have. So I think this is a possibility, but you know, like many things, the devil's in the detail. I think we'd maybe need to spend a little extra time considering, you know, how we would hand that off to an implementation team to solve. And I'll make one more point, like on timeline. You know, Alan, I guess this is more to Alan. You know, and I appreciate, you know, not wanting to have open-ended timelines. I do, but asking contracted parties to agree to a timeline when they don't know what they're going to be asked to implement is really, you know, you're going to have a lot of pushback on that. And, you know, I'm not sure what the middle ground there is. I do appreciate your point about not having open-ended requirements that'll drag out forever. You know, I don't want that either, but asking for a hard deadline without being able to tell a contractor party exactly what they'll have to implement is also puts them in a difficult spot as well. Sorry, I went kind of long there, but hopefully that was useful.
Mark, any thoughts to, since you can't see the Adobe Connect, I mean, one idea that's pitched in Adobe Connect is that extreme timeline would be sort of the outer limit would be the 10-year registration limit. I mean, does that feel like that's a benchmark for gathering in the potential policies?
You know, James pointed out, you know, that there's, you know, any implementation like this, you know, once you have, you know, once you have agreed on what you're implementing, when your start date is for it, you know, then you're going to, you know, you're going to start, you know, he used the example, you're going to pick like 70% up in year one and 70% up in year two, and you have sort of a diminishing tail on these things. And there are some that, you know, may never get cleaned up. There's some percentage of outliers out there that just, you know, drag on forever. And that's, you know, likely how any realistic, timeline's going to go. And maybe the question, you know, is what is the point where, you know, what is good enough on this one? You know, I think a lot of the questions will be on when does that 10-year period start, though? Just throwing out there saying, you know, it has to be done within 10 years of when, you know, when you agree on starting, you know, we can make that line in the sand, but, you know, why? I think personally that's a decision best left to the implementation team, the people that are going to be closer to the ones actually doing the work. That's I guess that's my, sorry for the long answer. I guess my short answer is I think that the timeline is really best left to the implementation team.
Thanks. Okay, Alan, thanks for waiting.
Thank you very much. I agree with pretty much everything that was just said, with the one exception of the end point. If indeed we were going to pick up 70% the first year and 70% of the rest the second year and so forth, I don't think we would be having this discussion. But in the case of the verification one with the grandfathering that I mentioned, we're 5 years into it, and we're still seeing over 40% of the domains not being verified. And it's going down, but it's going down very slowly. So, you know, it's likely to stay around for 20, 30 years at this point if we don't take some action. So that's the level of concern I have. Thank you.
It's Margie. May I be in the queue?
Did we lose Gina?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Margie, I heard you, and Lindsay's ahead of you, and then I'll come back to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gina. Can you all hear me?
Yep.
Yes, thank you, Lindsay.
Okay, great. Obviously, I wasn't in the first meeting, and I've just joined now. I just want to say from a registrar perspective, that's great to want to make all these changes and whatever else. The thing is, I mean, we looked at this with GDPR, and certainly from the company I work for, the sort of technically and the cost it would take to make that differentiation was a lot, and one that, frankly, we were not willing to make because it didn't justify the cost that it would take to do it. So while, yes, that's great, you know, that everyone wants to have, you know, this difference because it's, as Alex put it, over GDPRing it, I don't know who's going to pay for that within each of our systems. And yes, we've got it worldwide. I mean, this applies to all of our customers. But because to make those changes would be really, really difficult. So I do understand, certainly it must be frustrating from a certain point of view, not to have that difference, but also you must say it from our point of view, to make those changes would cost a lot of money. So if anyone has suggestions about that and also the time it would take to actually implement it, that's helpful. But I think there's a lot of registrars, probably registries too, who would have difficulties with this. And especially if you're a small registrar or registry, then even more, the sort of financially, that's going to be difficult. Thanks very much.
So I do feel like we have a little bit of a challenge with our small group, and it's, you know, no disrespect to anyone, but we started with sort of one composition of one group, and we were trying to follow on those conversations, and now we sort of have a, you know, some different perspectives that I think, you know, so we somehow need to manage that. So a couple of points, just Lindsay, because I know the document just went out. You know, in the previous call, the registrars were open to the idea of having the distinction and trying to think about the best way to bring that to fruition as far as distinguishing between the natural and legal persons. And on our screen, at least the screen that I have in front of me, if you scroll down to the staff draft recommendation, let me look for the numbers. I mean, there were some elements to speak to the need. So there's the educational component, which I think is C2 in the document, to start having registrars and registries work with the registrants to even help them distinguish and be able to use, you know, an admin at company.com or whatever,
So there are some elements here to speak to the constraints. And then to the other thing that I think was pretty much understood or supported in the last call was to figure out the tools and mechanisms for that distinction to take place and then how to phase that in. There was definitely a strong feeling for phasing. So anyway, I think we just, it's a bit of a challenge because we are a little disconnected from the conversation last time in the group. But so Margie, you're next. And Margie, I wanted to go back, you know, I'm sure you have some other points to make, but you had mentioned that you really felt strongly that it should be required and when. And then in response to your comment, Marika pointed out sort of the clause in A3 proposed by staff that once the mechanisms were identified and clear, then at that point the requirement would be considered. And so in your comments, if you could just speak to that and see if that might address your concerns, that would be very helpful. Thanks.
Sure. Thank you. This is Margie. I liked Marika's suggestion about starting the implementation team now versus later. I think that really helps frame, you know, the issue and make it, you know, an action-oriented thing that can happen now. So I very much liked that. I do have reservations about the time generally along the lines that Alan mentioned because we have provisions and in prior contracts and policies that haven't been implemented for a long time. And another example is the cross-field validation requirement for who is. That's been in the contract since 2013, and that hasn't been implemented yet. And obviously, accuracy is an important issue that hopefully we'll address in this group at a later point. So I agree with Marika's suggestion. I think it's a really interesting one. And kind of think about Lindsay's concern of the cost. I think, you know, the team could be, you know, tasked with taking a look at, you know, implementing in a way that, you know, minimizes the cost to the parties. I think it's unrealistic to think we're not going to have some costs that, you know, relate to implementing the policy generally. So I think that there will be costs, but keeping in mind that there's that the costs can be managed in a way that, you know, the choices are made to make it less expensive. That I think that's certainly something everyone in the industry would support. So those are my thoughts.
Thank you, Margie. You know, I wanted to just ask, it seems like listening to everyone talk, there's the timeline of the implementation of the policy, but I'm also hearing it's the clarity of purpose of this implementation review team and the timeline for it to complete its work that seem to also be a factor. Is there anyone that could, maybe we could frame that? Would that help to speak to those issues? How the IRT, the timeline for how that would occur. Go ahead.
Sorry, me? Who should go ahead?
I'm not sure who was that speaking. Is that Mark?
Sorry, yes, this is Mark. Sorry, I'm still not in back in Adobe.
Go ahead, Mark. If you say your full name for the rest.
Sure, Mark Anderson for the transcript. And actually, I'm not sure how to answer your question, Gina. I wanted to raise my hand for something else, and so apologies for that. But I'm not quite sure what you're asking or where that leads us. But I think we didn't really get you know, time to get into this on last week's call, but sort of the you know, we talked a little bit on what happens when you have a domain registration that's registered, to a corporate entity, a legal person, but their contacts are natural persons. And Margie mentioned this a little bit. You know, she talked about, you know, educating you know, education might be a path forward to educate legal entities to not use natural persons as their point of contact there. But I wanted to run with that one, or I guess I'd like to ask the group to run with that a little bit further. There are implications if there are implications on this, right? If you have a legal entity that uses natural persons as their point of contact, registrant, admin, technical, then we still have a GDPR problem there. We can take educational efforts, but if it's just educational, that only gets you so far. So there's still some entities that'll continue to do that. I'm looking for the group to run with this a little bit. Do we think there's something we should be doing here? How do we solve for the fact that this is still an issue that we have to deal with?
Thanks, Mark. So I just realized that this is only a one-hour call, and said our format has been 2 hours. So I know that Mark just framed a question there. I guess I'm going to just ask everyone if they could speak to on page 4 of the document is draft recommendation. And I just want to ask, is there anyone who can't live with this recommendation the way it's written? I mean, it speaks to the phasing. It speaks to the requirement. It speaks to immediate implementation. And it speaks to developing the mechanism before, instituting the requirements. So I'd just like to hear from the group that's on the line if there's anyone who can't live with this as the draft recommendation for EPDP's consideration. Alan Greenberg?
Thank you. I'm not going to say I can't live with it because I only got the document 10 minutes into this call because I also was not on the earlier call and it wasn't distributed widely. My concern is, and I'll try to make it very clear and short, I've already expressed the view that I don't think to the EPDP in general, saying the IRT will be able to add data elements to WHOIS or to the RDS is going to be an acceptable one. Yeah, we can try, but I honestly think that's going to be something that just won't fly. That's number one. Number two, IRTs can be somewhat problematic. I'll give an example of the thick WHOIS PDP. The board approved the recommendations in February 2014. In May 2018, they put a hold on it because of GDPR. But it had gone 4 years at that point and was nowhere near being completed. So IRTs can be rather problematic. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you. Alex Beacon, please.
Hi, Gina. It's Alex. Regarding your question is if we could live with it, it's echoing what people have said and on the phone and in the chat, given we haven't had a chance to really digest this draft recommendation yet. I can't really answer that, Gina. So we'll need some more time to do that.
Okay, thank you.
This is Mark. I agree. I'm not able to look at it right now and, just don't need time.
This is Marika. If I can maybe make a suggestion, because what we're currently trying to do is to get something to the full team look at and identify where there may be issues that need to be further discussed face-to-face. So would it be helpful if we put this back up and again, maybe not ask people to edit, but maybe provide comments instead of starting to redline and kind of flag, which parts they feel uncomfortable with. And then we can maybe take that and share it with the full team and kind of say, okay, this is not a full consensus recommendation from the small team. This is just a starting point to move the conversation further along. Now, here are some of the concerns that have been brought up, and we would like to work on this further during the face-to-face meeting and see if we can get this into a state that people feel comfortable including in an initial report. And as I put in the chat as well, we're not asking here everyone to sign off on this, commit to it, and now you can't change your mind anymore. We're looking for something to include an initial report that kind of gives an indication of the thinking of the group, but that shouldn't prevent you from calling out certain questions or certain issues that you would like to receive further comments on, or kind of indeed, for example, explaining this. The concern that there is between requiring something now and then not knowing what the cost implications potentially could be once it gets implemented and how to deal with that, and simply ask are there any suggestions or ideas that people have, are there ways in which this has been implemented that people are already willing to share. So again, I think that's where we're trying to get at. So, and as I said, except that not everyone had a time to review, but what we can maybe do is put that the package of the different elements that's on page 4 back up in a Google document and ask people just in the form of comments to kind of indicate which parts make them feel not at ease. And so we can flag that and then maybe take it back to the full group and see if there's a way to move that forward.
Yeah, thanks, Marika, because I think we are at that point where we need to bubble these back up to the full team. Alex Deacon?
Sorry, old hand.
Ben Butler, go ahead, and then we'll...
So I just wanted to say, I think Marika's suggestion about a comment-focused document is probably a good one, because I agree we do need to get this back up to the full group for thoughts. And for clarity's sake, the recommendations on page 4 very much align with what Benedict and I in conversation with SAC felt fairly represented our view on this legal versus natural persons distinction. So I just want to thank the staff that was involved in combining the comments in such a way that it does represent a viewpoint that we share, at least within SAC. I'll leave it off there because I know we're at the top of the hour, and I'll add comments to the document when it gets picked up.
Great. Okay, thank you, Ben. So this is Gina again. So Marika, it sounds like your idea is a good one. And then I might just suggest, I feel like a lot of the hiccups were, and I may have missed some comments in the chat, so I apologize if I'm overlooking anything, but it's one of the concerns associated with the IRT was around definition of task and timeline for completion. So I'm wondering if it might even make sense to have some concepts thrown out within the Google Doc on those two elements, even as a separate, just in the notes or something like that, because it seems like that's been a stumbling block to the idea of the IRT. All right. So, Kurt, unless you have anything else, I think the next step for this is to take the language, the draft recommendation, make sure that we capture the constraints and concerns around cost and implementation and timeline and some of those other variables so that we can use this to inform the full team to pick this conversation up and advance the proposals and refine the recommendations. Anything else from you, Kurt?
No, I had typed a couple comments into the chat, but I'm fine with that plan. I think it's a good one.
Okay, thank you. All right, everyone. Well, have a wonderful rest of your day, and thank you very much to the staff and to everyone for contributing on this.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference. Please remember to disconnect all lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.